who I am. I was trained by Al Gore after I saw his movie to give a speech, a talk based upon his slide set, and I've been doing that for the past 2 years on three continents. I'm here because I came to Poland to attend the United Nations Conference on Climate Change the first 2 weeks in December. Unfortunately, there was a failure of that conference to make any meaningful progress. It was dreadful for all of us who were there as ecologists and not as industrial interests. Unfortunately, again, the deadline is December of 2009 for a definitive treaty to cap greenhouse gas emissions, or we face a very bleak future. That future is not directly in our sight, but we can see that it's coming if we extrapolate on the patterns that our ecosystem is taking now. And the other conclusion is that the governments of the world will not be able to take action in time. They will not solve it if we don't do something. And this project that I have in mind is dedicated to moving those governments along. Now, I have four axioms that I would like to present to you. First, that life on Earth is in mortal danger. You've heard a lot of these facts in little bits and pieces. You've seen movies here and there and things on TV. Let me give you the statement by a body of 2,500 very conservative scientists who stated at the end of 2007 that global CO2 emissions must peak by 2015 and decline rapidly to avoid catastrophic changes in Earth's climate that may lead to the extinction of 20 to 30% of all species by the end of this century, the end of this century alone, and threaten human survival. Another quotation from someone you probably know, Stephen Hawking, who is afraid that the Earth might end up like Venus at 250 degrees centigrade raining sulfuric acid. This is not light stuff. James Hansen, the head of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Agency in America, who's been saying this for 30 years, the climate system is dangerously close to tipping points with disastrous consequences for young, for life, and for the general well-being of the planet. And in particular, we risk returning the planet to ice-free conditions when sea levels were higher by 70 meters. Incidentally, Berlin is about 45 meters above sea level. And about one-third of Germany lies under 70 meters of sea level. Now, just to give you a few of the catastrophic events, these are all possible failure modes for the ecosystem, for life on the planet. Any one of these could doom us. And if that's not enough, I'm sorry I don't have enough time to let you read all of those 20. Business and politics are not helping. That's the second principle. That should be patently obvious to this audience especially. Third, that public outcry can and has in the past brought down walls. And last, that the hackers of the world can wake the world. I'm looking for a few good people to help with this project. It's estimated that 1 out of 6 people on Earth have access to the internet. This will be an important channel for the eco-political social engineering, which this project that I will propose will be. I won't discuss it. I don't have time now. Anyone who responds to my email address, which is on my final slide, will get the straight scoop on it. I view hackers as the key masters of the internet, and you have little to lose but your time. But there is really no time to lose. So please, if you're motivated to, if you hear the calling, please email me at this. I've already reserved the Hackers for Earth domains in the .com and .org, which will be populated as part of the project, but that is not the project. The project, again, I call it eco-political social engineering. So thank you very much.
So the next
Okay, coming up, Mark Bergman, about fish marks, a combination of fishing and bookmarks. I hope I didn't take too much away. You go.
Welcome, everyone. Well, actually, the idea to stand here was born only a day ago. And I saw there was an empty slot, so I immediately wrote myself in. Well, I am Mark Bergman. Some people might know me by my nickname, Sea Chicks. Most of you might not know me at all. Why I'm going to give this lightning talk? Well, I found something that looks pretty odd, and I don't really have time to sort it all out myself. So maybe there's someone else willing to dive a little bit deeper into it. Well, how it works, kind of simple. Internet Explorer and actually Firefox as well seem to prefer bookmarks above DNS lookups. Which means if you type www.google.com in your browser, you expect to end up at Google, which will of course happen, unless there's a bookmark with the name www.google.com. And the URL of this is set to yahoo.com. So the only thing you need is a bookmark with the right name. And of course, you don't want to fish Google, or well, maybe you will, but it might be especially interesting for banks. Well, this is a screenshot of a bookmark in Internet Explorer. No hassle there. In Firefox, there's still the load this bookmark in the sidebar thingy that's on by default. If you make a bookmark from a JavaScript, it can only be added to a side panel. I'm still looking for better JavaScript to make real bookmarks, but I think that's only little technical issues and it probably will be solved. Also in Firefox, it actually gives away the trick because you see a pop-down from your URL bar stating the real URL as well. So that's a bit nifty, but in Internet Explorer, it works flawlessly. Well, some thoughts on what to do with this. Well, of course, www.bank.com, you can point that to https://www.bank.com, and then your own evil site. And of course, you give this you start with a lot of, well, rubbish characters to make people think it's a normal site. And well, you can actually have that site, make that site having a valid SSL certificate. So guess what? The little thingy that everyone has to check according to their banks will be closed and the site will seem perfectly safe. Well, what do we need to get this working? We need a way to make bookmarks as easy as possible. So JavaScripting or maybe some other way to trick people into clicking OK, which in the past has been proven not to be very hard. Maybe clickjacking is a good start for this. We'll still have to sort out how to fix the sidebar issue. So how to make sure that in Firefox the bookmark will load a full screen. Also, I haven't had any time to check other browsers, but I'm getting curious what Chrome, Safari, and all the other browsers will do. I'll be diving into this maybe for a few more minutes, but if other people feel interested and have time to sort this out, well, it won't even cost that much time, send me a mail and, well, good luck diving into this. My email address, you can find some more information on the wiki. So I'm more than happy to hear from you, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Next one is Mario. He talks about the Freiphone community, which is a wireless radio community. And after that, we hear Marcel.
Hi, I'm Mario. I'm supporting the Freiphone communities already for a few years. I don't know, many Germans, I think most Germans know what Freifunk is. You could translate that as free wireless. And we actually want to transfer the idea of free and open source software to infrastructure. So what we do is we have OpenWRT and other firmwares that we use, and actually we connect people through mesh networks. So there are, for instance, people who have connection to internet and other people who don't. Well, I don't have connection to the people who have internet, so I can go through another person in the middle, an intermediate. So that's, for instance, one case where we can use Freifunk. But Freifunk is not about just about sharing internet. It's a lot about like sharing it all and learning about technology, many things. So I don't want to talk so much about Freifunk because we have all heard about this maybe before or about similar projects. What I was interested now is what's going on internationally with Freifunk. So I did research and I set up this website, and the website is actually called global.freifunk.net. And yeah, it's here, and I found a lot of people all over the world who share this idea, and that's fantastic to me. So I'm actually collecting all the feeds of communities that offer Freifunk feeds, and I found about 220 communities, mainly in the Western language speaking world. It's very hard for me to find Chinese speaking and so on. So Asia is still somewhat underrepresented. But already more than 150 communities offer feed, and I collect these feeds and show them on my website. So there is a kind of a global newswire. And what I would like to do here is, because we have people from all over the world here, please join me. You know projects. Please email a project to me. Let me know about any project that's going on. As I said, we started with the free wireless thing, so it's not only about open source software. We have this idea expanding to open hardware. I met open patent guys here, Xavier Cassel from France. He had a presentation at the Congress. So it's not about open source, open wireless only. It's all about also about open hardware. Yeah, if you know any project, please mail me, and I would like to include this in the global newswire and promote the idea of free and open knowledge and sharing everywhere. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mario. That was only 3 minutes, so you gave us 1 minute.
Oh, I just, so here's my email address, of course. Okay, so if anyone is wondering, and of course you find my contact details on the wiki as well, let me know your website, if and I include it in the newswire.
Hast du schon umgestellt? So the next speaker is Marcel. He talks about Agile Admin.
Hello, everybody. I would like to talk about Agile way for sysadmins. Agile becomes more and more common in software development, like test-driven and something like that. In 2006, I wrote an essay about, and I analyzed how to adaptate or to transfer the knowledge of CRISPR, Scrum, and Extreme Programming, or special test-driven development, to system administration. So Agile values, principles, and practices, and try to how we can use this at system administrators. So what was my job at this time? And I call this Agile system administration. And if we are looking for that, it's not just a transfer of knowledge, it's also a search for the best practices for sysadmins, and that's what I would like to discuss, or would like to find people who would like to search for nice practices. And I want to introduce you a couple of ideas that may be quite common or known. For example, if someone hears first time about extreme programming, that's pair programming. Yeah, I know. To sitting two people in front of a keyboard, driver, co-driver, writing a test and then implementing the stuff. But it's not that all. This is the same in system administration. If you have a time problem, time-based issue, two people in front of a keyboard, I do that. If we are thinking about self-organized teams, it's quite useful to learn something, so to have a look back in the past and, yeah, to use your retrospectives. And if you're working in self-organized teams, you need some values to think about how that can work. And they're not my ideas. So the USENIX, which is a subgroup of the SAGE, sage.org, introduced the Code of Ethics for Sysadmins, which is some rules, like 10 rules or so, to how you can work. And yeah, for me, it's I got very into tests, writing tests in network environment like Nagios. What is it in English? Nagios. And yes, in this way, I like this test stuff and to stop writing every paper documentation, which is just crap. This is the idea of agile development as well. Like you have just tests and that is your documentation. And there are other way. I wrote responsibility on my slide. This means like if you have to hold the system running or the network running, I want to make the decision how that could work or which technique we choose to solve the problem. And I don't want to discuss quality. So this is XP as well. Like I want to be like what I've done. So. I want to make it secure and to make it fail-proof and make it tested and to be sure that it's okay. So if you're interested in stuff like this, I've recorded in 2006, it's quite a time ago, a podcast with a friend of mine, Basti, and it's in German, but it's about extreme administrating, which was the first title, but this title is not so good, okay? And have a look at the Code of Ethics from SAGE. And I like these ideas. And I would like to find people who are interested in setting up a domain, setting up a wiki, and collecting ideas. Thank you very much.
So, thanks, Marcel, for presenting us Agile Admin. Next speaker is Prix. He talks about Energize. The microphone is yours.
Okay, thanks. Welcome here. First, let me ask you a question. Can you imagine what this might be? Or why I might put it here? Right, we don't have so much time, so it's a scale and it's balancing two things. The data centers in the world and the Netherlands. Now, why do I balance those? They are quite comparable in CO2 footprint. Millions of tons of CO2 emissions per year. The data centers in the world are, at best estimate, 170 million tons of CO2 per year. Now, if you compare this to a country like the Netherlands, 146 million tons of CO2. Now, this is a big number, right? So, I'm making three key points here. Computers use a tremendous amount of energy. We can do something about it. And this something usually pays for itself. As I said, computers use much energy. 16 million people, highly industrialized country, top 20 in gross domestic product, the Netherlands, and all these tomato greenhouses and what have you, uses less energy than the data centers. Oops. Or another figure, the data centers use about the same energy as all the airlines together, half of the airlines together. And yes, we can do something about it. Infrastructure methods in data centers can bring us a 10 to 20% reduction in that figure. You can make the cold aisles in the data center between the racks hotter. You can use natural cooling, what we in technical terms call open a window. Here in the moderate climate, we can do that. We can use better computers. This is what Sun and IBM and so on tell us as the biggest, best solution to the problem, use better computers, greener, more efficient servers, gives you a 10 to 20% reduction overall, which is a lot. But we can do more. We can do better management. And this is not going to cost you a lot of things. It's actually not costing money, it's saving money. Shutting off dead servers, servers that don't do anything anymore, just nobody dares to shut them off because nobody knows for sure. Okay. 10 to 25% reduction. Use virtualization, aggressive virtualization, 25 to 30%. Install capacity when you need it and not earlier. Normally you buy a server for 3 years. So you buy the capacity that you expected to need in 3 years and then some. Now this is, of course, buying too much capacity too early. With virtual machines, you can do this very much smoother. Gives you 10 to 20% reduction. So we can reduce something like 50% of the energy consumption in the data centers. It's good for the planet. It's good for the bottom line. So for the management people, they like that. And we save money by that. So less hardware cost, less infrastructure, less running costs, very good return on investment. So let's tip the scales here. Thank you for your time. Here I quote my sources. The PDF is on the web. It's on the wiki and probably will be published somewhere. My contact details, if you want to know more or want to discuss things, thank you.
So that was clean four minutes, so perfect on time. Next one is Michael, and he talks about mapping. Yes, okay, everything's working.
Okay, I want to pitch scalable vector graphics to you. That's an XML standard that you're probably familiar from illustrations in Wikipedia or the icons in KDE. I use it for mapping election results on the web. So usually in mainstream media, you find these election maps that are done in Flash, and Flash is proprietary, is closed, and yada, yada, yada. And you cannot put your data in, and it's always a good idea to be in control of your tools. And so I built Election Atlas using scalable vector graphics, and you can just view source, put different data in it, and I will show you why it might be worth doing this. So this will work on the iPhone. This will work on the $100 per child, and it even works on this Windows machine. So, I wanted to show you. I mean, this is the Conservative Party. I mean, you have seen that, but let me show you something about the Nazi Party in Germany. This is the 2002 election. You will see some pockets here in Saxony, but it's still, I mean, the darker the colors, the higher the percentage, the higher the popularity, but we are still far below 5%, even below 3%. Now, to give you some idea how this developed, if we look at the 2005 election, and again, NPD is the Nazi Party here, and so, yeah, this is the same scale. We are now here up to 7%, and we can also try to gain some more insights when we look at some structural data. So I will show you a map with a percentage of foreigners. And again, the darker colors mean high percentage of foreigners. And I think the picture is quite clear that a xenophobic party is more popular in areas where there are no foreigners and is less popular in areas where there are a lot of foreigners. Just keep that in mind. You can check this out. Oops, sorry. There's a lot of data in there already. Oops, sorry about that. So, this is my last slide. You can check it out at this URL. There will be elections in Germany in June, the European election in September, the general election, and you can check this out. And also, maybe you will be interested in how the Pirate Party will do, and you will not see that probably in Spiegel Online, but you will probably see it here. Thank you.
Manfred, please come to the stage. So. Braucht ihr die PowerPoint oder reicht auch PDF? Na, dann mach.
One, two. Oh, yeah. Good evening. We would like to introduce to you the Netwatcher, part of free radios in German language. But for all who does not understand German, I'm here to tell the people what is with this camera there. There are cameras over there and over there which are filming us to the face. For this, we have the black bars. Oh yeah, we have the black bars in front of our face because there are lots of cameras there for the live stream. This camera is for you, for your security. I hope you feel more comfortable and secure because this camera faces you. Okay, thank you. It is, of course, not running. Okay. So, let's talk about Netwatcher and free radios.
Yes, we are from... Okay, this talk will be in German because we're talking about German language radio, free radio, Radio Netwatcher. So, wir haben also in den letzten drei Jahren jede Woche eine Sendung gemacht und haben also so einige Knacker in den in den Schlagzeilen gehabt, die wir gemacht haben. In unserem Radio geht es hauptsächlich eben, wie unten schon gesehen, um Privacy-Radio, hauptsächlich um gesellschaftliche Themen und dergleichen. Und die Dinge, die wir eben halt gemacht haben, ist, der Manfred hatte ein Interview, als es ihn noch gab, mit Jörg Haider gehabt. Und er hat sich dort ganz eindeutig gegen Überwachung ausgesprochen. Ein Schelm, wer Böses dabei denkt. Naja, und wie war das mit dem Richter, Manfred?
Ja, vielleicht sollte man noch dazu sagen, wir haben alle Parteien natürlich befragt, kurz vor der Wahl. Und interessanterweise haben sich so manche Parteien, die sich als links oder links stehend ausgeben, bei den Bürgerrechten ziemlich taub oder sind schon im Liegen umgefallen. Wir können euch jetzt nur einen kleinen Ausschnitt in den wenigen Minuten geben, was wir schon in den bald 200 Sendungen gemacht haben. Das aktuellste Interview in der letzten Sendung war ein gewisser Richter im Salzburger Landesgericht, betreibt eine Seite namens Internet for Jurists, und wir haben über alles Mögliche gesprochen, auch über die Tierschützer und über Paragraph 278, aber die interessanteste Forderung ist von ihm, er fordert die IMSI-Catcher unter Arrest, also unter richterlicher Kontrolle. Warum und weshalb? Sollte man sich vielleicht anhören.
Ja, vielleicht liegt es einfach daran, dass er also auch die Seltenheit von Lawinenunglücken in Wien einfach so sieht, weil das war ja immer mal der Grund, IMSI-Catcher überhaupt anzuschaffen, zur Ortung eben von potenziellen Opfern, Lawinenopfern. Also die höchste IMSI-Catcher-Dichte gibt es offensichtlich in Wien. Und immer mal fragen wir Leute, die nach Wien gekommen sind, dass, okay, so viel sind es dann, ob sie denn schon mal das eine oder andere Lawinenunglück gesehen haben. Ja, wir haben also in 2006, glaube ich, war der Easter-Hack in Wien. Da hattest du genau wen interviewt?
Ja, den Mr. Chaos Radio himself, Tim Pritlove. War eine große Ehre, immer mein Studio zu haben. Und wir haben natürlich über die Geschichte über Chaos Radio befragt. Nur um ein bisschen die Bandbreite zu zeigen. So eins zurück. So, und jetzt dann noch ein paar Highlights zum Schluss.
Ja, interessant. Also in Wien, Maria F. wurde beim Edelitaliener die Handtasche mit zwei Diensthandys geklaut. Und das ganze, diese ganze Geschichte beim Edelitaliener hatte natürlich eine Videoüberwachung. Der Täter ist bis heute nicht gefasst.
Ja, was zeigt, dass die Überwachung in Österreich perfekter ist?
Ja, das österreichische Parlament hat schon seit einem Jahr das sogenannte Sicherheitspolizeigesetz. Nur noch ganz Kurzfassung, also die haben das schon, ja, wir bekommen es jetzt, weil es sei heute unterschrieben worden, das BKA-Gesetz. Stattdessen gibt es in Österreich noch keine Vorratsdatenspeicherung, keinen Beschluss dazu, den wir natürlich seit einem Jahr offiziell in Deutschland haben. Gut, mehr Infos zu Bürgerrechten, Überwachung aus Europa, jeden Freitag on air auf Radio Orange in Wien, also auf 94.0 und auch als Livestream regelmäßig eben zwischen 13 bis 14 Uhr und selbstverständlich im Sendungsarchiv auch im Internet.
Einen letzten Satz noch. Es gibt, ich bin froh, dass es diesen Event hier gibt, der sich immer als international anstreicht. Wir reden aber oft über die deutschen Probleme. Die paar Beispiele, die wir aufgezeigt haben, sollen zeigen, dass Österreich oft vorprescht mit etwas, was dann später in Deutschland kommt.
Ja, vielen Dank. Thanks for the insights in the Austrian security state. And tune into Radio Netwatcher if you want to hear more. Now Karl talks about panspectrosism, and the stage is yours, Karl. Go ahead.
Panspectrosismus.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In German, maybe. I don't know. I wish my German was better. I will. Is that the? There we go. Anyway, my name is Karl Palmas. I'm a sociologist of some description, and I'm doing a research project currently about contemporary modes of surveillance. We often hear this Orwellian expression that Big Brother is watching you, and that's something that we always come back to when we talk about surveillance. And we feel, me and my colleague Christopher, who's sitting here, that maybe that idea is not always working, especially in the light of current debates on surveillance that we've had back home in Sweden recently. We have to ask ourselves questions like, exactly what is being watched, and what does watching entail? So for instance, I mean, it's not so much in the recent debates about the FRA bill as we've had in Sweden that it's not so much us as individuals that are being watched. It's a lot more about the inputs of our minds that are being watched and registered in various ways. In terms of what is being, what watching is entailing, it's more and more along the lines of rendering our probable futures visible in various ways. You would see this in what intelligence agencies are doing, but you would also see it in big business, trying to come up with various ways of, like, airlines knowing which people to upgrade in order for them to not choose another airline next time. So these are the kinds of new modes of surveillance that are evolving. One old way of looking at what surveillance would be is this old Jeremy Bentham notion of the panopticon, like a human being looking at you as an individual, whereas now we see a lot more types of surveillance that are closer to what Manuel de Landa, a philosopher, calls the panspectron, monitoring of any kind of anything, all the kind of electronic traces that we leave behind. So in that way, being panspectric in the sense of all electromagnetic activity, not only the visible light that a human eye can see. There are three ways of looking at, or three technological developments here, obviously. First one, that more and more of our analog behaviors are being logged in various ways and turned into digital data. We call this universal modulation. The second one is the greater storage capacity, and the third one would be data mining capabilities that are increasing. So instead of saying that Big Brother is watching you, it's more likely that you would think that Big Brother, whoever that is, whether it's a big corporation or a state, knows you and probably knows you better than you know yourself. Anyway, I won't keep you for longer than this. You can read more on this website. Thank you.
Tack så mycket, Carl. Thank you very much. So we are coming through the next speaker, Christopher. You're talking about a magazine?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Christopher Kullenberg, and I'm the editor and publisher of the Resistance Studies magazine. And it's available for free downloads on rsmag.org. And the magazine consists of articles concerning resistance practices and social change in a very general and theoretical and an empirical way. So it's a peer-reviewed magazine, and here is a kind of a flow chart for the peer review process. And thanks to the internet, we are able to have a very short peer review cycle. So we feel very enabled by this new technology. So we publish shorter articles, between 2,000 and 4,000 words, and also book reviews, and we are an open access magazine, and we are a member of the Directory of Open Access Journals, which we find very important for making social science and humanities to spread worldwide. But there is a problem, and this problem is very serious. At least, that's my opinion. Because with the internet and internet publication, there comes internet surveillance. So for a magazine like the Resistance Studies magazine, which deals with kind of controversial issues sometimes, activism, resistance, maybe even terrorism, it will be impossible for us to guarantee that the authors will be anonymous in the future. And the Swedish case is, I would say, the most important aspect is the FRA law, which is a law that allows the state to copy all traffic data from that is passing the national borders. And this one will be effective on the 1st of January. So I would say that this will make critical research less attractive for academics. And as we have heard on this conference and also in the media, there will be a fear of that there will be similar cases to André Holm, who was arrested for doing exactly what we are trying to publish. This, from a philosophical point of view, leads to bad science. That's my argument. Because if nobody dares to research controversial topics anymore, nobody dares to go out and look what happens in the streets where activists are protesting or something like that, it will lead to bad science, because this will leave a, you know, a black hole in the domain of knowledge. And it's not, the future doesn't look very good, because we have in Sweden at least, and you already have this Vorratdatenspeicherung in Germany, we will be having this data retention law will be brought up in the parliaments this spring. We have the IPRED 1 directive, which has been almost passed in the parliament, and the IPRED 2 directive is also coming closer. And so my conclusion is just that I want to publish your academic articles on digital resistance, because you are the experts on resistance on the net. And in what Carl was talking about, if in these panspectric societies, we also need to cooperate to protect this sensitive information. And my conclusion to maybe this conference is that hacking is a form of resistance. Thank you very much.
Tak, Christopher. Thank you very much. So today we are widening our attention to Austria and Sweden. Can't be a mistake. So the next speaker is Michiel. He talks about funding. So, funding. I thought you did it before the. Kannst du das machen?
It's a long time with funding it. So.
Yeah, so we still have time, relax. Okay. Everybody keep the 4 minutes. So thanks to the magic of the networks, the file will. Okay, then if it's on the stick, let's copy it onto the laptop.
There is a stick already in here.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Can I plug this or can I?
No, it's here. Okay. Yes.
No, we didn't request a Windows machine.
So, wo ist die file?
Well, it's nice to see one. I haven't seen one in a long while.
Where is the file?
Yeah.
Wo ist die Datei? Du hast ihn gerade raus? Achso. Ah, okay. So, system normal, all fucked up.
I'll do it without. Basically, I work for a funding agency called Enelnet. We're just a pile of money that came from selling an ISP. The ISP doesn't exist anymore, but the money does. And basically, what we try to do is fund the kind of things that you do. So we fund a lot of developments like Tor, Freenet, GNUnet, and other sorts. Anything that is network related is eligible, but we also do a lot of privacy related stuff, open document format, instant messaging. So basically, there may be.
Which is the file name?
It's a big long name. It's like. Yeah. So if there's people among you that have had a good idea for the last couple of years and didn't come to actually spending the time to do it, why don't you take 6 months off, contact us, ask for money, get it, and start programming. So all that's the URL to visit is nlnet.nl. We're a Dutch-based organization, but we operate on a global scale. We can fund projects easily up to 30,000 euros. If you require more, we can go quite significantly up, but then we have other procedures. If you just need some hardware for hacking, like if you want to hack some Wi-Fi cards or routers or whatever, that is eligible, travel costs and so on. And it's a very easy and no-hassle procedure where we can be completely anonymous, even if you really need it, because we're not a government institute, we're a private trust fund, so a charity. So, and meanwhile, there's still no progress. So, forget the slides; they will be up on the web, on the wiki, I guess. And if you're either a student looking for a summer job, but you don't want a Google code thing. Or if you just fell unemployed, or you just had a great idea but you don't have the time to do it, well, contact me. I'll be available throughout the rest of the night, I guess. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Okay, we have one more talk there. It's the one talk that was missing this morning. So Steve will do this just now. We're pretty much on time. We have 30 minutes left, so 5 more minutes here. If there's anyone else in here who would like to give a talk, please come up here and sit in front. Ah, we missed you? Okay.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm the co-founder of Syndicate, hackerspace in Luxembourg. Thanks to Sven for having me, because we were a bit late. The Fono Lit party yesterday was great. No time to lose, only 4 minutes left. Luxembourg, what is Luxembourg? Luxembourg is one of the smallest countries in Europe. We have 480K people, so 400,000 people live in Luxembourg. What is Luxembourg? It used to be steel, now it is banks, big money, and obviously we need a hackerspace. Crisis, what crisis? It's a great album by the Supertramp. So yeah, what happens in a crisis where all the banks go bankrupt? Luxembourg, theoretically at least, would go bankrupt as well. So shouldn't we actually focus on innovation and on things like hackerspaces? Engaging in politics, one of the things we thought was, why not engage in politics? Why don't go the political route to build up a hackerspace? We didn't do that. We didn't think that would be appropriate. So we tend to stay political neutral. Who are we? That's the initial bunch of people that are building the hackerspace. In the middle, we have a girl, which is really, really important to us, to get as many people as possible from different aspects of life. Girls are very beneficial to get a tangent on things. They have a different mindset than guys, believe me. Funding, very, very important. We are in a recession and we need money. If you call up Cisco and say, hi, I'm Steve, I'm from the hackerspace, give me money, they say, no, bugger off, so we need to think about something else. Press coverage, very important too. One of the biggest in Luxembourg, at least, IT newspapers published an article about us. We go to conferences and we sit around with Club Mate and just telling people about us. We need more people that network together, people that actually work with us. Social links. In Luxembourg, 480,000 people, small country, so you have a lot of links. You can't go and take a leak next doors without the neighbor knowing it. So it's very tricky, actually. The hurdle in Luxembourg, at least, a place to stay, / home. Why? It's 12 euro a square meter in Luxembourg. So if you need 100 square meter for a hackerspace, it's really expensive. We have a Facebook group, of course, and we are actually looking into Facebook issues, privacy issues mainly. What do? We have a site up, surveillance.mallory.lu, with the help of OpenStreetMaps. We try to map out Luxembourg City with all the publicly viewed cameras. We take a look into RFID things, the Ego pass for public transport, the uni.lu pass for the canteen. So the RF idiot. We have created a graffiti research lab in Luxembourg to combine actually IT with arts, because they go really, really great together. I think you know all the great projects from GRL. Okay, cool. Marketing is very important as well. As you have seen, we have put up a couple of things here in the conference as well. We have a poster, we have stickers. We also have stickers which you can put onto windows, which you can take off. Because if you try to convince the mayor of Luxembourg that you are a cool group and you do graffitis on the walls, they're not going to like it. So we try to focus on these things. We try also to focus on the environment, to actually think about the environment. So all the things politicians actually want to hear. We create synergies because if we have a hackerspace, we can invite other people into the hackerspace, which is also a benefit if you go up to the local council and you tell them, hey, we need 100 square meter, and actually a lot of other people can benefit from it. Thanks for listening. This is a motivation to other people to go out and do stuff, go out and build not only hackerspaces, but also engage in political rallies, in demos like we had one next door, do flash mobs, do whatever you like, just enjoy it. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for that, yes. Create more hackerspaces, dudes. So, one more talk there. Anyone else? Come up here and let us know. I think after the next talk, well, we would have almost to conclude it. But please remember, give us some feedback, and I hope to see you tomorrow on Saal 2, on Room 2 at 11:30 for some more talks. And maybe next year we might take it to the next level. We would like to have like somebody helping us taking a picture and putting it online right away, so we don't have to do it overnight while we're actually partying, right? So don't forget to take another look at the wiki. There's a page on parties, and there's several parties tonight. Of course, tomorrow evening there will be the final party at the Seabase. Be there and give us some feedback. And yes, we would very much like to welcome more lightning talks. So if you can put up your lightning talk even earlier in the wiki, we might even get a little more time. So there's another talk. I don't know who we are. Please introduce yourself.
All right. Hi, I'm Luciano. A few days ago, I woke up with an idea, so I want to tell you about this. Happens to me that I have many servers in my home. One of those servers are a honeypot. So in the firewall, many connections need to be forwarded to that honeypot. One of those ports are the 22, the SSH, because I run a honeypot for SSH. So I have the problem to need to enter to my service by SSH too, but not to the honeypot. So I write few bash scripts to redirect dynamically the connections with the origin in my source, with the origin in the computer where am I in the remote place to that server where we are. I want to go. Yes, in plain words, I just connect to a page who see which is my IP and create dynamically a firewall rule to redirect all the packages to a selected server in my home. In this way, I can use only one port to connect to many of my servers. Just with one click. The idea is to just do a sync package to this home page, and in that case, the rule is generated dynamically. That's what I call web knocking. It's like port knocking, but with web. I implement this in OpenBSD, but the idea can be used for every operating system. The interface is in ASCII art, so you can see it by, I don't know, making a telnet, or you don't need a browser. You just do that with a connection with telnet. Yes, that's the idea. This is the homepage. It's my name, lucianovecio.com.ar. Slash web knocking. Maybe you can use it, have some Python and some shell scripting. It's a really stupid idea, but I don't know. Maybe you would like it. You like stupid things, so.
So, This was the third session of the Lightning Talks at the 25th Chaos Communication Congress. Tomorrow at 11:30 in room number 2, that will be the fourth and last. I want to get the speakers all up so we can give a big applause for this entertaining and informative talk. So get up. So, you can find all the information on the wiki page, so the web addresses or the email addresses. Some even put their slides on, so contact them if you want. Go ahead. Have